Hello, and welcome back to A Life Economy, dedicated to exploring the intersection of technology, spirituality, and consciousness. I'm Cosmo Scharf.
And I'm Summer Perry.
And on today's episode, we are joined by Ryan Holmes, the CEO of Space VR. Welcome, Ryan.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So Space VR is a super fascinating project. I'd love for us to start if you could share a little bit about what the experience is like and why you created it.
For sure. Space VR is a virtual reality company. We predominantly work with float tanks as a form of distribution. And we have been pursuing for a long time recreating this profound experience that astronauts experience in outer space called the overview effect. It's very sought after. One of our advisors paid $90 million to go to space, and he was able to experience it. That's very expensive wow. for most people. And so so we're doing the service of allowing everyone else to experience it at a reasonable cost. And so far, I've been pretty successful. We have a 6% cry rate of the experience. I think it hits people pretty hard. It's a very serious, sobering experience. It's not a game. It's the real deal. And so right now we're just working on making it better and better and better and getting it to more and more and more locations and just refining our marketing so that we can communicate to more and more people and be more effective.
Awesome.
While we're doing it.
So I have not had the chance to experience Space VR in a float tank, although I do recall several years ago trying your VR experience just in a headset on land, not floating in a tank of salt water. But it's a really brilliant use of VR. You know, there's so many different kinds of VR games and experiences out there, but this is one of those things that really makes you understand the power of virtual reality, that really truly transports you into another space, another state of consciousness. And it is powerful. You know, you talk about the overview effect. I'd love if you could share a little bit more about what makes that so powerful and what I guess maybe some, a little bit of the history around it as well.
Sure. Thank you for saying that. I agree with you. I think it is a good use of the medium, and it is a lot more powerful than people understand. I think I don't think we truly, really understand how powerful it is, and especially how powerful it can be when you're hyper-focused in a float tank. It's just a completely different environment. Usually we're distracted by a million different things throughout our life, whether it's, you know, Facebook or, you know, just even just sitting up straight or like maintaining civil composure. It's a lot of background processes that are running at any given time. And when you can drop like 50% of your background processes and focus at a level, truly where at a level you cannot do really in anywhere. It allows you to access a deeper state of brain in general. And so having these two combined for the overview effect is very important to having it hit even harder. And so on the overview effect itself, there's been a very small amount of people in space, like 500, 600 people that have ever been able to go into space. And a majority of these are through NASA or like Russian Space Agency or other space agencies. So as far as citizens, there's only been about 7 citizens that have been. And so the ability to experience this is pretty low and very expensive. And so what we know about the overview effect comes from these 500 to 600 people. And when they come back, And we also have to understand the context of these people when they're communicating to us. They're, in a way, they're like super trained soldiers. If that makes sense, because they've been training for like 15, 20 years, right? And so it's not like you just take someone off the street who's just like, you know, a normal person that just does normal things and they experience it. These are 20-year trained military grade individuals. Some of them come from like fighter jet level training. They like fly F-22s, F-35s. And so that's the context of who's communicating this to us. And these are hardened military individuals, and they'll just start crying looking at the earth. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about that, you have to understand like what's going to make a hardened 20-year F-35 pilot cry on sight. Not a lot of things. Yeah. There's probably very few things that will do that. And this just happens consistently, repeatedly. And it's something super profound and hasn't been able to be communicated to us fully because there's a limitation in camera equipment. Everything that you and I know about space comes through the lens of a camera, and it's not the same resolution as our eye. So truly, you've really never seen what space looks like, ever. You've never seen it because no camera can record at that level. It cannot record the lighting at the level of your eye. It can't record at the frame rate of your eye. And so it's and so what they see, it's truly profound. And they come back and they try to explain it to everyone. It's almost like a spiritual mission, right? When they come back and they see this like crazy thing and they try to come out and communicate it to everyone, everyone's like, oh, that sounds cool. You know? Like, oh, that's an interesting thing that you saw. and like, wow, that might seem cool, but like, but it's super profound and it's hard to communicate. The language is such a low bandwidth method of communicating anything, right? Even the most basic thing, like I'm just communicating, like right now I'm looking at the ocean, right? Just from where I'm sitting, and there's no, that says so little about what I'm looking at. And for me to describe to you, like everything about it could take, you know, hours or just like if I got really, really detailed and wrote it all out. So I think the only real way to communicate properly is just really, really high resolution. And you got to have cameras that are up there that are super up to date. And oftentimes there's a procurement process with NASA for equipment they use, and it's not as fast as technology can come out. So usually there's some sort of like technology delay of what can go up and what, and it's usually, I think it's getting better, but there's still a delay on technology. And I think they have done a good job of doing it, but we've searched really far and wide for like the best content that you can possibly imagine. And we've seen things that are really profound. Like there are incredibly great footage deep in the archives of NASA that the average person doesn't see. Mm. However, it wasn't recorded with this intention, right? It wasn't recorded to communicate the overview effect. It was recorded to say like, look at this cool thing for 30 seconds, or like, look at this cool thing for 30 seconds. There's never been a recording made for this express purpose.
Right.
At the frame rate and at the, with all the different camera settings required. And yeah. And so what we've done now is created the best that we can create with the existing footage.
Gotcha.
And now we're working on improving it even more with working with some cinematic level editors that know how to color match at high resolutions, how to make sure. I mean, you guys know the most in LA. There's, once you get into video footage, there's so many different things that the average person just has no idea about that goes into making something quality.
Absolutely.
And so many things. And we're just learning that it takes these like very, very high grade professionals to do this. And these people are specialized with like 15 years of experience, and they're like the best. And they can make things that are profound. And it takes like a team of people like that to do it really well. Mm. And so that's what we're working with now to improve it even more. And just getting as many locations as possible. Right now we're at about 22 signed locations, and it's all over the world now. So we have one in Amsterdam, Munich, Vancouver, Hong Kong. We have ones all over the US. We have one in a couple in Seattle, a couple in Florida, a couple in New York, a couple in New Jersey. We have one in Boston, one in Houston, one in San Diego. We just got two in LA, working on a third in LA and a fourth in LA actually. And then we have one in Chicago area, one in Detroit area. So it's really spread out, and it's now we kind of have global coverage across a lot of major areas, and just working on making it more dense.
That's amazing.
Just getting more and more locations. There's a surprising number of these locations.
Mm. Well, congrats, by the way.
Really under the radar. A lot of people don't know.
Yeah, congratulations. That sounds amazing. Like a really cool installation, super unique. Working in VR for over 7 years, I've never seen anything like it. I'm actually really curious about the hardware. If you don't mind, could I ask about that? Like what the hardware that you use in your experience is like?
Yeah, of course.
And because you're in water.
Are based in LA right now?
Yeah,
we're
in LA.
Los Angeles.
Which part of LA?
West.
West LA, yeah. And Santa Monica. I'm in Santa Monica.
West LA. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So we just got green light on Marina Del Rey.
Awesome.
So we're done deploying there and Laguna Beach. And yeah, so that should be exciting. Hopefully, maybe you guys can come try it out. I'd love for you to come and try it out if you want.
Yeah, we would love to.
Yeah, Marina's really close to Santa Monica. So it's right down the street. So you're in water, right? You're floating in water.
Yes.
In a float tank. How does someone have audio when they're floating in water? And where is the screen? Like, is it submerged in the water? How do you do that?
Yes. So I can explain the basic mechanics of floating for those that are new to it. So floating in general is commonly used for healing all kinds of ailments. It's super athletes use it. They have them actually built into their houses so they can do it every day. So they can just work harder. And in the floating itself is 1,500 pounds of magnesium sulfate. And this is commonly known as Epsom salt. So when you go to do like an Epsom salt bath in your house, usually use like a teaspoon or like a couple teaspoons or something. And this is like, if you stacked it high, it's like 30, 50 pound bags.
Wow.
Like probably three times the height of your ceiling, stacked on top of each other. And they're all, mixed in super, super dense. And so the density allows for you to float really well. And so you float kind of like on the middle, right on the middle. And so you're half out of the water and half in the water. And in the tank, the temperature syncs with your body. And so your body's a certain temperature, and when it matches perfectly, you can sort of, you do lose sense of your body. And so, like we were talking about earlier, when you're able to drop these background processes, it unlocks all these different capacities that you can now use. And in the military actually uses float tanks for super learning because of this particular attribute. And so, usually it's an hour session. You go in, you take a shower, you get undressed, and you go in the float tank. And normally people just do it in pitch dark. And so they do it for an hour, and it's ultra deep meditation by itself, which is, it's a great thing by itself. And I recommend anyone to do it. And our equipment works on top of that existing process. So we have invented the only VR headset in the world that works inside of a float tank. It's slightly higher resolution than Oculus. And it is completely waterproof, completely heatproof, and saltproof. And so, in the past, NASA had some experiments doing VR in the float tank, and they were not able to figure out how to do a VR headset in the float tank. So we have successfully outpaced that sort of level of development.
That's so cool. I was wondering if you had something. Oh, no, that's just really cool. That's amazing that you have your own proprietary headset.
Yes, yes. It took a long time to make, and it was a lot of experiments, a lot of dead devices.
Yeah.
A lot of iteration. But ultimately, oh, you also asked a question about the sound. How does the sound
work?
So currently at most locations, the sound works by playing out of the headset. And so in a float tank, you usually wear... earplugs so that the water doesn't get into your ear. And so the sound plays from the device, and you can usually hear it with earplugs in because it's pitch dark and there's no other sound. So you can still hear it from the device. In a few locations, we're working with integrating into the float tank audio system itself, which plays through the water. Just super cool.
That's amazing.
And, and I'm interested in pursuing into bone conduction. That's probably the best way to do it. However, there is no technology that exists commercially that is just plug and play for that.
I wonder if you guys could work with those toothbrushes that let you hear music when you're brushing your teeth through bone conduction. Maybe like a bite plate or something.
I like that.
Interesting. A bite plate.
Yeah.
Bone conduction has gotten very, very good. Have you guys tried the latest ones?
No.
Anywhere like Best Buy or something?
Oh, that sounds so cool.
It's pretty good. Like it used to be just like, this is a cool toy. Now it's like, these are Bose headphones that are bone conduction. And the state of the art is very good. However, there are technical constraints with it being underwater in a float tank. So those need to be addressed.
That's amazing. So floating is available now around the world, which is amazing. And, you know, I remember meeting you about 4 or 5 years ago when you just like had a demo or you just raised money. And now, you know, hearing about how you have a functional product that is all around the world is really amazing. What's next for you guys? I hear you're working on a satellite. Is that correct?
Yes. So we've been working on a satellite for a long time. Satellites are harder than you would expect.
Oh, really? Harder than I would expect. I'd expect them to be pretty hard.
So we have the satellite. We have the launch paid for, and can manifest it on a number of rocket providers at any moment. The satellite itself is about 80% built. And right now, the only thing that needs to be finalized is the camera system. On the camera system, there's all kinds of things to consider. you want a high frame rate, you want a high resolution, and you there's a lot of considerations that can be made for our goal with this one is to have burst live. So that when it's over a ground station over the US, for example, when it passes over the US, it takes about 15 minutes to go over the US. We wanted to do burst live so it can shoot down live to a ground station, and then you could be in Marina Del Rey and say, like, really stressed out, you just want to orbit the Earth. You can go in the tank and you can just orbit over the US. And then
that's pretty awesome.
The rest of the world, and just blending it in smoothly is the goal.
That's incredible. So it will be in real time, or as
the goal is real time. Yeah,
that's amazing. So, what would happen if there were? Well, I mean, would you be able to do that? You could do that any time of day, right? Even at night.
You could, and it's probably cooler at night. Well, it depends who you talk to, but it would be very cool at night. I think the city lights at night are just profound. It's profound. And like right now, you could go over and see the California fires from space.
Exactly. I can't help but wonder what the implications for environmental science could be with this. Like, I know that's not the direction that you originally intended, but... You know, as someone who cares about the environment, I think immediately, like, how could this be used to monitor the environment and, you know, keep an eye on what's going on with our climate as well? Have you ever thought about anything like that?
Yeah, there are other satellite constellations that are much better suited for gathering data on the environment. Ours is on allowing the humans that are causing the environment to have issues to see it for themselves instead of the machines.
That's really powerful. What kind of feedback have you received from participants who've enjoyed this experience? What are some of the statements that have really stuck with you?
We've had pretty profound feedback. We've had some harsh critics come in, and I was super scared of what they were going to say when they come out. And even the harshest ones, they came out and they said, like, they felt like they were in space. And I was like, I was very scared about what they were going to say. And they said, like, I felt like I was in space. I felt like I was orbiting the Earth. And the people that come out, they say things that only astronauts that have experienced the overview effect say. And we can identify that because we have seen and heard and read all about what astronauts would say. But when people come out, it is changing their perspective, and they are getting a higher perspective. It is actually helping them with I have circumstantial evidence on it helping them with their personal life issues. And so, for example, it can be as silly as we had I think she was like 17-year-old girl come in, and she had just broken up with her boyfriend, and she's just, you know, devastated. And she did the experience and came out. We got her feedback on what she thought, and like, how did she think about anything like about her life. And she told us that she was having this issue, and that it helped her realize there's a lot of other boys in the world. And so it was kind of hilarious, but also it actually gave her relief in the situation that was causing her anxiety. So there's like a tangible non-humorous outcome there. And so we've had other people, like I have seasoned technology executives come in and try it out. And one of them, when they came out, they told me that they there's a point during the experience that they start experiencing an immense amount of gratitude for everything they had, for their family, for just everything that they had, their kids, for the position that they had in life, for how successful they were. And they were just able to sit and reflect and be super grateful for just all the amazing things that they have. And it's, you can tell just in their eyes and how they say that was a real, that's a real vivid reaction. Like this is not like, there is definitely, there's definitely an experiential reaction with like an output happening.
It's so like powerful, the thought of what this can do for people. I remember on your website seeing the video where the astronaut on his first trip into space, when he first went out into the where there was no gravity, and he looked out the window and he said he saw the Cape of Africa and he was surprised, and that's when he really realized he was actually in space, and that he was just overwhelmed with emotion after that happened. I thought about how impactful this could be, an experience like this, for someone's mental health, that say they're experiencing anxiety or depression, PTSD. I've heard that experiencing surprise and awe can be really healing for those kinds of mental health issues.
Yeah, I agree. I'd love to get hard data on a lot of these data sets. I think it would be great. I actually had an experience when I was floating. I was floating in Pasadena, Los Angeles at Just Float, and I was in the float tank and I was thinking, for some reason, what came to me when I was laying there is this idea of like an injured veteran, war veteran, and how great it would be for them to experience something like this. And when I had this thought, I had this very physical reaction when I'm sitting in the float tank, and I very vividly remember, like, I had this like spark on the top of my head, and it just like, so like this tingling feeling just like slowly traveled through my whole body. And I was just like, oh shit, there's probably something there.
Wow.
That's amazing.
That's fascinating.
And so I always remember that, and I really think it would be good to have these kind of people do the experience. And I think maybe we should focus more on bringing a few of them in, or targeting them to come in. Right now, it's been a lot about just getting going, and just logistically at so many locations, it's kind of like opening 20 McDonald's at the same time.
Except you're not feeding people hamburgers, you're feeding people spiritual transcendental experiences.
Would you like fries with that spiritual transcendental?
That's amazing. So what I find fascinating about the work that you're doing, this company, is the shift in perspective that you're able to give people, to bring that experience that is so niche and so rare and so generally unavailable for the vast, vast majority of the population. You're literally bringing it down to earth, and we're seeing the earth from a new perspective. And I'm reminded of I watched the Overview documentary on Vimeo to prepare for this. And I believe that was in part what inspired this whole project.
What inspired it.
Okay,
yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So I highly recommend anyone listening to watch the documentary to get a little bit more context on this whole conversation, because it's a really well produced and powerful documentary. Even just watching it, on my iPad here, I was getting chills in my body, just like, wow, this is incredible. And I was not in VR and I was not in a float tank. I was here in my home. But I was reminded of, there's a really interesting phrase or sentence that someone said along the lines of, we went to in 1968, we were obsessed about going to the moon. We're going to get to the moon. And then we took a photo looking back at the Earth, and we realized in retrospect that perhaps really, in part, why we were so compelled to go to the moon was in fact to see the Earth, see ourselves from a new perspective. And of course, we have the whole environmentalism movement, you know, kind of spur out of that single photo of, you know, seeing the Earth from space for the first time was a profound moment in the collective consciousness. And I mean, certainly there's a massive connection between, you know, how we view our relationship with the Earth and with each other, to these photos and to your experience that you're creating in VR. So I'd love to hear a little bit about that from your perspective of how you see what you're doing with Space VR, how it's having an impact potentially on the way that people think about their identity and perhaps the planet as well.
Yeah, Space VR is completing the dream of astronauts. And so the dream of astronauts when they go to space is to be able to communicate what they're seeing to everyone else. And you see it in the quotes, you see it in what they say and in their speeches. And for once, people at scale, like globally, will be able to experience what they are talking about personally. And it's very powerful. And it's very powerful, especially when you put it in terms of policy decisions. We can affect everyone on a civilization scale. And then on top of it, if our representatives and our senators and maybe even our president were to do this experience, and maybe not just our president, but world leaders across the 200 nations that make up the Earth, it would profoundly shift priorities of what we focus on and what we take care of. And I think the ultimate thing is you can't take care of something you don't know about. You can't care about something you don't know about. And so I don't think that anyone or any of these people are like inherently evil individuals. You just cannot react to something you don't know. And so what this allows is for people to know, for people to really experience, to really see what is happening and where we live and why it's worth buying an electric car for.
Yeah. I'm reminded of the jokes or like the memes about giving Trump acid or DMT, like how that would, you know, shift his perspective. And now I'm thinking, oh, well, like, you know, what if we could just bring Space VR down to Washington, D.C.? Or, you know, have you had those thoughts about bringing demos into politics?
For sure. Of course. And there is a location in Washington, D.C. Yeah. there is a location in D.C. It's a Ford Tank Center. It's very beautiful. And so it can potentially be a beachhead into these sort of things. But it's not just that. I mean, there's one, you know, there's one in Paris. There's many in London. There is many in New York, close to the United Nations. There is there's centers in Beijing, China. So like these are the decision-making capitals of the world. And I honestly think it's probably something that should be required. I think it's probably something that should be required by all leaders, that you can spend an hour orbiting the Earth. Mm. And so that you are able to shepherd the planet well.
Right. That's really fascinating, making that a form of a requirement to be a political figure or leader. That is yeah, you know, what I love about this experience is it's a prime example of the ultimate positive potential of virtual reality that I that was what inspired me originally to really get into VR, and what I was harping on for multiple years, you know, because people get into virtual reality for different reasons, right? Some people just want to make money. Some people just want to make games. Other people like you, there's a real desire to shift the planet, to shift our consciousness in a positive direction, which is what is so desperately, I shouldn't say desperately, what is so, it was so important and what is needed, increasingly needed. And here you have an example of a piece of content when combined with the right context, AKA, you know, a float tank, really does have the potential to profoundly shift your perspective in a way that gives people space to see the connection, the interconnectedness that we share with everyone on Earth. And that pale blue dot, you know, the Carl Sagan quote that has had such a profound influence.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think about what kind of civilization would we live in if this was internalized, if this was a known common fact. Like if you just did this in like third grade after math class, when you're learning how to add numbers, you're just like, oh yeah, this is this is part of the like ethos of where we live. We all generally know. It seems like we would take care of everything a lot better.
Absolutely. And another thought to mind, I forget who's, I don't totally remember who said this, unfortunately, but there's this idea that the technology we create is really an externalized version of our own natural capacities, right? Like a phone call or even just this video call that we're having now is a version of telepathy. And in space VR, specifically with this concept of having a live satellite pointing at the Earth, it's like a virtual astral projection. And float tanks are known to be able to induce that kind of experience for some people. I'm curious, do you have, is that something that is, do you have any experience with, or have you considered sort of the relationship between, your, you know, the technological experience that you're offering and the, perhaps the more, the psychic, dimensions of our consciousness?
Yeah, for sure. I think I've never been able to astrally project. Have you guys been able to do that?
I've had one experience where it came, it happened actually when I was already asleep. And I know there's different techniques for doing it where you can, you know, just do it just for meditating, or do it right when when you're falling asleep and just sort of tricking yourself into staying awake. But for me, this one experience maybe 3-4 years ago, I was just, just in a dreamless state. And all of a sudden, I was just like, it was like coming out of like a roller coaster, like from the top, like that motion of just like the inertia, like all of a sudden, I was just like a light switch, my consciousness, like I just became aware of floating high above a sky, over sort of like a reddish brown desert type environment. And what was so fantastic and fascinating about this experience was the level of clarity and awareness that I had here in this space. It was just as real. My sense of being where I was so crisp and clear, and just as being here with you in this room, talking to you right now. And what was even more kind of mind screwery was that I actually had better vision in these dreams or it's hard to even say. It's like dream is just a word, but it wasn't really a dream, because a dream is like you're sort of like in this foggy state and you have a struggle, you struggle to really remember it. This was like, I was there. I truly was in another dimension, wherever mm-hmm. that was, however it works. I have no idea, mm-hmm. but I really was there mm-hmm. and I flew around mm-hmm. for a little bit and not a whole lot happened. But it gave me a glimpse into the expansive possibilities of what is possible in this reality, that there's way more to that this world is just one of many possible worlds that we could be experiencing right now. And in fact, we're probably in all those other dimensions simultaneously, and our consciousness is just, you know, localized or focused within this one particular frame, which is our body, to have a certain experience that we agreed to experience. Kind of like when you go, you pay a ticket for, you purchase a ticket for a movie, you walk into the movie theater and you enjoy the movie and you walk out, you're like, oh, that was a great movie. So that's kind of like our life. It's just like the story.
I feel like that sometimes. And I think you articulated it very well. I've never really done it though. And so I don't know. It's funny. I actually scheduled a time to try to astral travel like a couple weeks ago and did not do it. And so, I'm sure it's possible with enough training and enough focus. And perhaps we could assist in that if that's something that, it clearly seems that millions of people have done this successfully. So maybe there is a tried and true way to execute it that most people probably don't have access to. And we could potentially develop something that could help people do it. And so, because I think it's a lot about training and just knowing what you're doing. And so if there is a way, but no one's really systematized it or.
Yeah. It makes me think of, what Dr. Joe Dispenza says about, reaching deeper states in your meditative practice. It's important to first activate the cerebellum. And he does that with some, guided meditations where he gets you to sense the vastness of the space around you in space. And I thought of this when I was watching the experiences that you guys give people. Being in the float tank can, like you said, you lose track of your body and you can simulate that endlessly expansive physical sensation of being just like out in space and there's nothing surrounding your body. So I think that the cerebellum probably does get activated in the float tank sessions, and that can aid in going deeper with the meditations based on the neurological research that's been done. So I think you're onto something there with that. That would be really cool.
I theorize that it can be done. I think it can be done. And I think it would be a great additional piece to, you can orbit the earth or you could astral travel to
Memphis. Yeah. One? Well, what you're offering literally is a virtualized experience of astral projection. But the funny thing is that we actually don't, I don't know, funny, but the fascinating part, the powerful realization is we don't actually need any gear. We don't need any external technology to be able to access those aspects of our consciousness, just in the way that I was describing to you about my own experience. I did not have a headset on, but what it showed, and that was, it was a powerful realization, actually. That was the first, I came to understand true in the truest sense that we do not need a headset to have virtual reality. We can do it inside of our own mind while we're asleep or, you know, probably while we're awake, although I haven't quite had that level of experience. But to your point about developing content for it, there's sort of a bridge in between the two worlds that it seems like you're potentially uniquely suited to help with, which is maybe developing some kind of content that is deliberately designed to induce those kinds of states while you're in a float tank and you have the VR headset on. And then it's sort of like a door that you open or a gateway that trains your body into perhaps there's some sort of protocol or program where, you know, it's like a body scan or, I mean, there you could do some really trippy stuff with that. I mean, just the float tank in and of itself is a trippy experience, you know, no VR headset. We've done it a bunch of times, not recently, unfortunately. But you know, I imagine with the VR headset, it combines for a very powerful experience, and that, I mean, yeah, I can't wait to try it. It sounds really awesome.
Yeah, I'm wondering if I could ask you about your Yeah, we have a little bit of a delay. No
Sorry,
worries.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, it's fine. I'm just I was just curious about your content process. It sounds like right now you're editing footage from NASA, so most of these experiences are being done through editing. And you touched a little bit about how the way the footage is being filmed isn't really done with the intention of sharing these experiences. I'm wondering if you have any plans for the future about having more say in the footage that's captured in space. Are you involved, or is the company going to be involved with that? Are you going to have more creative control over that process in the future?
So our decision was to launch our own satellite. Other people have had success, like Felix and Paul, in navigating the NASA landscape. We have chosen to go with our own satellite, just so that, because there's a lot of considerations to be made. There's astronaut time, there's astronaut scheduling, there's the cost of astronaut time. There is if they even want to do what you're asking them to do at all. And then there's like the expediency, like will they do it today or is that next week or next month or the next 6 months? And this, the lack of stability in that process is what led us to pursue our own satellite, because that way it can record all the time, and we can be in full control of it, and it can be working, you know, 24/7.
That makes sense.
But it's possible to work with NASA, and others have successfully, and however, it just seems like a very long-term, you know, process that was, it's just not a sure bet. It's like,
yeah, it makes a lot of sense to have the control.
Yeah. And the second satellite is also a lot less than the first one. So hopefully, you know, all the investment.
I'm curious about, you know, Edgar Mitchell, an astronaut, was one of your advisors who unfortunately passed away in 2016. But I'm really curious to hear a little bit. I'm assuming you had, you know, you had many conversations with him, or you know, a few conversations. What was his reaction to what you were doing, and what was it like to talk with him?
Yeah, so we were able to interview Edgar Mitchell very, very close to when he passed away, actually.
Wow.
And so we interviewed him in his home in Florida. And it was very interesting talking with him. The first time we showed him VR, we showed him the Samsung VR like intro video. Which is, you probably remember this concept where they're like flying over horses and like all that stuff. That's what we showed him the first time. And he came out of it and he was actually crying.
Wow.
And it was, my mother was there. My family's based in Florida. So my, my mother was there, and she thinks it was because she realized that, that he realized that this is how people can experience something he's been advocating for so long. And he very easily and quickly became an advisor because he saw the power of what it can do. And very interesting individual, very smart, very trained individual. I mean, he very much is like the military trained astronaut that you would expect someone that would have the opportunity to go to the moon would be like.
Yeah. So he grew up in Roswell, and you know, I was just doing a little research on him and listening to some of his clips and articles, and he claimed that he had confirmation that, you know, there was in fact a crashed extraterrestrial craft in Roswell. And, you know, of course, besides the overview effect, and, you know, there's a variety of topics within the subject of outer space. But of course, my mind immediately jumps to extraterrestrial life, aliens. There's a whole world of research into that field. And I'm curious what your perspective is on, you know, the ETs and life beyond Earth, given your full-time thing is thinking about and looking into space.
It's pretty clear to me that these, I assume call them galactic beings, have existed and interacted with Earth for a long time. And that if you look for them, it's pretty easy to find where they are and what kinds. And I'm just reminded of this particular site. It's like an hour and a half south of Mexico City, where it's just thousands of years. There's like Harvard professors that have like gone down there, and they're like, are these people crazy? What are they talking about? And they're like, because all the townspeople, they're just like, yeah, we see them all the time. It's just like this like average casual, like, oh, so, and it's like these orange light ships. And you'll talk to the mayor, and he's like, yep, they're here all the time. You talk to like the guy, like who's just doing a standard job. He's like, yep, they're here all the time. And then you like talk to this other person. And then they have like this Aztec temple on the top of the mountain that has like all these like it's like engraved in the walls, like pictures of them and stuff.
Wow.
Seems pretty clear that, you know, they've been here for a long time. I don't know why we don't recognize their existence. Why we hide from it. I mean, it might be a $1 trillion question.
In fact, yeah. More accurate, multiple $1 trillion question.
Yeah. But it seems pretty obvious that that there are these things that exist. And I think we can ask ourselves why we aren't interacting or participating with these kind of things, even though there has been a New York Times article, you know, recently released that says the Pentagon is admitting to crafts in the air that are not built on Earth.
Right. That little phrase buried in the whole article.
I mean, if you have a craft, like it's kind of like if you see an American jet, like a fighter jet, right? It has like American flag on the back. To have a jet, you have to have a manufacturing facility for the jet. You have to have like a group of people smart enough to build a jet, and you have to have like a lot of people mining the metal in the ground to smelt the metal into shapes that look like a jet. So it's all very interesting, but I mean, none of us are UFO hunting right now.
Right.
So like, why aren't, you know, why it seems like even with the information, we're just like,
cool.
I still want to accomplish the goals that I'm already focusing on.
Exactly. That's the funniest part. It's the most, it's just a bizarre part of this whole pandemic situation where, you know, we're all kind of running around with our heads cut off, fearful about, oh, am I going to get COVID from my neighbor or just walking out on the street? And, you know, about a month ago or so, there, that article in the New York Times came out confirming what was, you know, the story that already was published by them in 2017. So it's not even necessarily new information, really. I mean, what was new was that phrase of the, you know, that it was, you know, not of this world. And, you know, what that means, we don't know, but it's just funny to me that, like, you know, there's been a large community of people that care about, you know, UFOs and are interested and curious about extraterrestrials, and amidst this crazy, unprecedented health crisis, there's this mention of, yeah, so remember the UFO thing? Like, that's a real thing, guys. Yeah. It like doesn't even make the news, really.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Like, that's kind of kind of a big deal. Like, that's kind of a really, really, really big deal. And of course, you know, there's a whole rabbit hole of information around that starts to open up. But I don't know. I'm super fascinated with it. And yeah, I was curious to get your perspective on it as someone that kind of gets paid to explore space, essentially.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it seems pretty clear to me that there's like different ones. There's not like one type.
Mm-hmm.
And then people, I don't know. It's kind of brings into question the structure of reality itself.
Mm.
Right. I think that people that don't want to live in a timeline with like intergalactic presence, it seems like they're capable of doing that. They're capable of just living that life.
Yeah.
And then you can also have the other people who are like in the CE5 community who have like these large group meditations, telepathically calling in ships. Yeah. And they can also live that life if they want.
Right. Interesting. It's like this bifurcation
of the timeline. Yeah.
I look at it as timelines. That's my way of understanding it. And these people are calling in a different timeline than these other groups.
Yeah. Well said. That's really fascinating. I agree. I know what timeline I'm in. I'm the one where we have amazing journeys with extraterrestrials, and we get to explore other worlds like Star Trek. That's the one that I'm voting for.
Yeah, me too.
It sounds like fun time.
You know, people online are asking, they're dying to ask about your experience getting to pitch for Elon Musk.
Okay. So we do have a question and answer going?
Really. I just happened to see that someone wrote online. They were like asking about Elon Musk, and they were saying that Elon Musk would think this is really cool. So I just wanted to hear about that experience you had.
Yeah. So I've had the luxury of meeting Elon multiple times. The main time that we met was at the International Space Station Research and Development Conference. And I think this was like 3 years ago. So it might have been like 2017 in Boston, Massachusetts. And so he was the keynote speaker for the event. And there's about 700 people there. It's a huge auditorium. And he was on stage with Mike Sefferdini, who was one of the main directors of the International Space Station when he was working there. And at the end of everything, they had a Q&A session, and I tried to see if I could convince Elon Musk to come do our thing. And there's a video of it online where you can see, like, at the end, where I ask him what are his thoughts on virtual reality space exploration. And the ultimate response from him was, I think it'd be pretty cool. Like,
of course.
Overall thing. He said he tried the experience. Yeah, he said he tried the experience at Oculus and at Valve, and that he was worried about the extrapolation of it into like a 100-year timeline and how people might actually live in virtual reality. Which would be interesting. And then he said he thought it would be cool to do for space. And then I tried to close him on coming to our office in San Francisco.
Good for you.
It was very difficult. But he was very nice and accommodating, and, you know, suggested maybe that's possible. And
maybe I can fit you in.
Yeah, but I think it's only a matter of time. Yeah. Like, how is next Tuesday at 3 p.m.?
Yeah.
I think it's a matter of time before he tries it out. I mean, it's I actually showed Glenn Shotwell HTC Vive at a space conference, and I think she had not tried it, or maybe she had tried like very basic stuff. I don't think she had really much introduction into it, but she's the president of SpaceX under Elon. And she had a great time.
Awesome.
And it was very nice. And yeah. I think if you guys, it would be nice to get Elon in the float tank, I think.
Totally. We should start a hashtag campaign. Something actually we have in common, weirdly enough, where I got to meet Elon briefly as well around virtual reality. We were, my co-founder Johnny and I were demoing virtual reality in the Simpsons writer's room on the Fox lot. And the episode happened to be it was the Elon Musk episode was guest starring. I haven't actually watched the episode, but it was really amazing. We got to we came in and they have all the scripts laid out on the seats and the tables for everyone, and his script with his name was right next to my script with my name, and it was like, oh my god, is he gonna sit next to me? He didn't sit next to me. He was sitting with everyone else, but that was like a tantalizing moment. He showed up like half an hour late, and everyone's just kind of like waiting for him. But it was cool. I didn't really get to talk to him that much, really at all. I just shook his hand. But it was cool. We were trying to get him into VR, but he didn't actually do it. This was like in the early, like the DK1 days. And it was a while ago. And
yeah.
You know, he's an interesting character. There's a lot that I am super inspired by his vision of, creating a regenerative paradigm and getting away from fossil fuels and, freaking starting a Mars colony. I mean, lots of really, of course, big ideas. But I'm very concerned about the Starlink satellites. With SpaceX and their effects on our health, and that doesn't really seem to be being addressed in a big enough way. So sort of a double-edged sword. My perspective of him is sort of like a little bit I question his intention sometimes, but overall, I mean, I think what he's doing is pretty inspirational, but I don't quite know if I know for sure I'm not on board with his transhumanist perspective on getting the Neuralink chip in the body. I'm not on board with that at all. It's like, oh, if we can't beat him, join him. Like, don't really agree with that. but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I agree with you that there are plenty of things to love and plenty of things to think more about. It is interesting, like we were talking about timelines. It's interesting the timelines that he focuses on. And it's interesting to think about if the timelines he's really focusing on are actually necessary to focus that strongly on. Are they inevitable creations, or are you focusing on it and creating an inevitable situation? I mean, the one in particular is just his like superhuman killer AI like fascination. I mean, yeah.
Well, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way, right? Like what
is
we focus on.
Is it just another thing that people can be afraid of?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something to be aware of for sure. And like you're saying,
yeah,
like,
I truly believe that. And so I'm not sure if
we choose the timelines that we focus on, like you were saying.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, it's fine. I think it was really cool that you mentioned that he said he was concerned about people living in VR. And that you were thinking about that as well. And that's why your experience is so cool, is because it's a VR experience that reminds people of their humanity and of our home and of how amazing our planet is, and gives us that perspective to remember that we are human and appreciate what we have outside of VR.
Right.
Yeah, it is very cross experiential. It is interesting to think about things like YouTube addiction. And I was just reading the other day, like there are people, certain people that are addicted to YouTube, like it's a drug.
Whoa.
So it's interesting to think about that in VR terms.
Yeah, for sure.
But I guess, you know, like anything, like World of Warcraft, how many people play World of Warcraft?
A lot.
Yeah. I don't know.
So
I guess it's important to choose which timeline you want wisely.
Yeah, definitely.
We've talked a lot about the impact of your space VR experience on other people. But before we wrap up here, because we're kind of just cresting an hour, I want to ask you about how your experience has impacted your life, and how the overview effect has changed your perspective, maybe initially when you were first starting out, and maybe more so recently.
So I'm always having this go back and forth between what I would call the infinite and the finite, right? The overview effect, it allows you to see a wider set of I'm not sure the best way to word that. It allows you to see yourself from a vantage point that you don't usually get. And so once you start to see yourself at that vantage point, you can start to recognize the probability of most things happening in your life, and especially them happening at a certain time, are actually very low. And so what I've experienced from it is you start to see how reality itself almost feels architected, if that makes sense. Just the perfect timing and just the probability of anything, like out of infinite possible things, certain things, like very non-infinite things will happen to you at a very precise time. And so the overview effect for me, it's really allowed me to see those things a lot more strongly. And it's interesting to see them because it makes you really think about the nature of reality itself. And like, and for me, I've had times where I've been like a spiritual scientist of sorts, where I've experimented with these things and seeing like what's the extent of this architecture, so to speak. And it's quite interesting to play with. And I'm sure you guys have as well, when you just set intention for something and just to see how quickly it arrives in your life. Or to really track what you're thinking about or what you're focusing on and seeing how quickly that is created or shows up. And so it's really helped me see those experiences a lot closer. Because I think when you're in your current perspective and you're experiencing it from first person, you don't understand the probability, if that makes sense. Does that make sense to you guys?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really does seem like there's more to what meets the eye.
Yeah. And so when you're experiencing the overview effect, it definitely relaxes you. You see that there's a lot of things that are happening at the same time. A lot of things, like the whole Earth is like moving around the sun and the atmosphere is protecting the whole Earth. And it also has like a magnetic sphere that's protecting the Earth. And the engineering of this is profound. Like it's either made by God or aliens. And so whoever made it or however it came into existence, it's profound. And it's incredibly massive. And the scale of it is so big. And you're like, and we're like worried about these little things. Like, am I going to make this deadline? Or am I going to make this? Am I going to be able to cover this? Am I going to be able to be on time for this? You know, is, and then you look at the scale and there's like say for instance, you're fixated on and you're very anxious about reaching a goal. And then you're in orbit around the Earth and you just see like these huge mountain ranges that took like millions of years to like slowly accumulate into mountain ranges. It gives you this perspective of time. And I think the biggest thing that we have is we all feel like we're out of time all the time. We're like rushing to this like next goal. We have to get here. We have to get this now. Mm. And it has to be like right the second. And when you're in the overview effect, it slows you down. It slows down your perspective. And it shows you that it may not be necessary to rush that. In that, for me, it's giving me insight into perhaps that you can enjoy that process. And that that the Earth has been here just for like millions of years. And that maybe the next iPhone, you know, it's going to be okay if you did it in 3 months.
A good example.
You know, it's like... there's so many things that you learn when you're orbiting the Earth, and it's always different. And I learn something different every time because I'm always at a different place in my life when I do it. And so in the past, I've seen that there is so much land on the earth. Like, we don't understand how much land is on the earth. We live in these like small cities next to the water. Majority of the earth is unsettled land. And then on top of that unsettled land, there is no one living in the ocean, which covers 70% of the ocean or of the earth. And so when you think about like what percentage of the earth is actually settled, it's got to be some small amount, like 5% or something. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of people talk about carrying capacity of the earth. Like, if the population is too big, can we sustain? Can we keep growing? Should we lower our population? I think the earth isn't even remotely close to our carrying capacity at all. Not even close.
Yeah.
There is so much land to grow food on. There's so much ocean, and people are talking about fresh water and that we're going to run out of water or something. You can just desalinize the ocean. It's 70% of the earth is water. So we're not even remotely close to our carrying capacity on the earth. Not even by like, I think we could 100x our population if we wanted to, and we could still be fine.
But there's Mr. Fuller much. Talks about
we
that.
We don't understand the sheer vastness.
He yes. talks about how it's not, we're not even close to carrying capacity. It's more the problem is how we're living. That's the issue. We are surpassing the systems that we use to live now. That's what we've surpassed. The earth can handle a lot more.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think we could 100x the population of earth and be totally fine. We have to reconsider how we do things, though. Like right now, we just have this habit of building these like cities and then waiting for rent to increase like dramatically. And then we just hold it. We just like hold the cities and the properties, and the rent and the value only increases by the amount of demand that exists. So it's basically, it's a harsh reality that like property values increase by the number of people that don't have property. And so you see this in like Japan, for example, where they have these interesting policies around this, and they don't let it happen. And so it's the way we handle things, and the way we take care of each other, it could be a lot better. It could be a lot better. I think that we could provide homes for everyone. I think we could have quality, like quality water and food as like a baseline for everyone. I think that's doable. I guess that's, I'd like to see some shifts made in that direction.
Yeah, me
Agreed.
Too. I vote for that world as well.
Totally.
There's a lot of room for improvement and also a lot to be grateful for. And yeah, there's, I guess what's cool about Space VR in relationship to everything that you're saying is it gives us a tangible picture and experience of what is worth saving, what is worth preserving, and really the fragility of our lives here. You know, when you see how the atmosphere is just this, you know, paper thin layer, and when you think of all the ways in which we're destroying the atmosphere and destroying our forests and destroying our oceans, you know, something has to give, something has to change in the way that we're living if we want to keep growing and evolving as a society. And I think the more entertainment and content in the realm of what you're doing, the faster we're going to be able to get people into the mindset, into the belief system and structure of recognizing what is really important for us to ultimately become an interplanetary, intergalactic species, which is, you know, one of the goals that Elon Musk talks about. And you know, just going back to our conversation earlier about extraterrestrials, you know, if we want to make it out into space, not just virtually, but in craft or some other form of, you know, getting there, we're going to have to solve the problems here on Earth simultaneously, or you know, we can't ignore all of the variety of social and economic and political challenges. That's one of the things that sort of bothers me about the whole, you know, Elon's obsession with getting to Mars, which is, you know, profound and admirable and exciting for sure. But it's like, well, you know, why can't we invest that same amount of energy at the very bare minimum into addressing some of the problems that are facing, you know, billions of people right here, right now. And, you know, and that's not to say like we should not go to Mars. Like, I'm totally down for that. That seems like a worthwhile thing to do, mm-hmm. but it's just like, yeah, it's just it's a reflection of the way in which our values are out of alignment.
Yeah. I can see that. I think the main value misalignment is just how much we spend on like military weaponry.
Mm.
We just have so much military weaponry.
Right.
It's like unfathomable amount.
Yep.
And it's like, I think when they do studies on spending on military or spending on space, there's a much higher return on government spending for space than there is for the military. And it makes a lot of sense when you think about like new guns or better guns or like better ways of killing people. It doesn't always directly affect your livelihood. But for space, a lot of the right. things that they're optimizing are things that will directly affect your livelihood. Like communications tools, like quantum communications, like for non-local communication, like nuclear power, that's like micro-nuclear power so that you can power your spaceship. So like medical things that you can have remotely to address medical needs remotely. These are all things that space would develop as we're moving forward through space.
Mm.
So I think it's not really an either or for like space or the issues on Earth.
Right.
I think we have to consider like what's the return on investment for our government spending. And I just don't really see it on the military side. We already have like 800 nuclear bombs. We could blow up the whole Earth like 50 times in a row. It's probably enough, I think.
yeah.
So I think we need to focus our own budget on things that are positive for the world.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement. And yeah, I mean, certainly that, yeah, the ungodly amount of money that we invest in the military is a prime example of the ways in which we're not really investing in things that are going to bring about a positive future for us, right? If we put our money, if the budget is a reflection of our values and a reflection of what we deem to be important, then yeah, that doesn't really seem like a great investment for the future. I mean, it's kind of a whole other topic of conversation, but I do think we should wrap up. I'm curious, where can people learn more about your work?
The main thing is our website, spacevr.co. And then you can see all the locations where you can book space VR experiences. That's the main thing. We have a lot of articles coming out every month. So just Googling space VR, seeing the latest Recently, we had an article in Wired magazine.
Oh, cool.
And soon we have a couple more coming out. Just reading those would get you up to date on the recent activity.
Congratulations. That's amazing. And yeah, thank you for hopping on today. This has been a really fun conversation, really interesting to hear about your progress and what you've been up to. And looking forward to experiencing it for ourselves.
Yes. And I'm looking forward to you guys trying it out and letting me know what you think.
Definitely. That'd be awesome.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Ryan. This has been a great conversation. And for those listening, if you're enjoying this podcast, feel free to leave us a review on iTunes or share this episode with a friend. You can visit our website at alifeeconomy.com. We'll be back in a few weeks and we'll see you soon. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone.